talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Paulie's a great guy, and you know, you could see the disappointment, obviously, when he was put on waivers. But it's mixed emotions for a guy. I mean, at one point, you don't want to see a guy leave the organization who, you know, all of us in here believe he you know, although he was on waivers, he was going to still have an impact on our season this year. And it's tough to see a guy go like that. But on the other hand, you know, there is the, you know, he's getting a fresh start. He's getting an opportunity to go with the big club over there in Montreal. And hopefully it all works out for well for him. There's some real positives, I think, for him. He's closer to home, to his family and stuff like that. So you just hope it works out for him. He's a good guy. He's a good, great player. And I think he'll have success.
There are days where it can feel like entertainment. There are days when it certainly can feel like a business. And then there are days that you are reminded that these are actually human beings that are involved in this game. The Calgary Flames placing Mason Raymond and Paul Byron on waivers yesterday. About 10 after 10, Mason Raymond came on the ice, big smile on his face. He was relieved. But no Paul Byron. Paul Byron, now a member of the Montreal Canadiens. He did, however, come out and speak to the media for one final time. And at this point, I'll bring you into the conversation, Pat, because it was you that kind of pointed it out. Not an easy conversation for him to have. Not a conversation he wanted to have. Not a conversation. I was taken aback by the fact that, you know, the only thing missing were some of those kids' tattoos with Flames logos. I mean, he was all logoed up and everything. He looked and talked like a Flame, but he was making that transition. It was clearly a transition that hit him hard.
I mean, I think when Byron signed here in the off season and had an opportunity to chat with him, it was pretty clear that, you know, he was fired up to be back with the Flames, was fired up that they qualified him, and was fired up to play another year under Bob Hartley. He said it a couple of times. You know, when remember the year before when they didn't qualify him and then signed him, he kind of talked about that and said, you know what, I could have gone elsewhere. I had better offers. I could have gotten more money elsewhere, but I wanted to play for Bob. I wanted to be a Flame. I wanted to stay in Calgary. This is where he wanted to be, and he made that very clear today. And, I mean, look, the guy was holding back tears. He did not want to go to another team. You never want to be placed on waivers, but when you're placed on waivers in this situation, knowing what it was, you're probably hoping that you don't get claimed because you want to stay in this organization. I don't think that he was earmarked for the American Hockey League if he did go through. So I think you're kind of choked and disappointed, and I think it's a tough day for everyone involved. Brad Treliving spoke about it this morning with the guys and again earlier today about how this is one of the worst parts of being a general manager, but you got a business to do. Guy did not want to leave. He was very, very attached to being a member of the Calgary Flames. I think that much was made very, very clear today.
Well, you've seen it, you know, over time. You see a bunch of different incarnations of this, right? You look at a guy like, I was trying to think, and I don't know if I'm 100% accurate on this, but I believe Nick Hagman was the last player that was claimed on waivers that was a member of the Flames. I might be a little fuzzy on that. But he was ready to go. Mm-hmm. Like, that was, you know, they tried to trade him, sat him down. That was a different situation.
Correct.
Right? You've seen all kinds of different incarnations. Let me ask you this, because I heard you at noon, Kickoff Hockey Central, and I'm intrigued. This is a player who has been, I think, in your wheelhouse for a while now. You've certainly written about him. You've certainly talked about him. You've certainly covered him. I think you've done a really good job over the years of explaining his value, where you see it, his growth, and all of those things. Do you see today, I mean, it's, you know, the human emotion. I'm just talking about that. We can move back to the practical business component of this. Is this a mistake? Are the Calgary Flames worse off today in some form than they were yesterday? Are they, and, you know, I want to be careful about that because I don't want to portray it as, oh my God, they just, you know, released the cap. That's not it. But when you look at the totality of a team and you look what he brought and you listen to Bob Hartley talk about him today and mm-hmm. what he brings, and I think, again, conversations that you and I have had about that, is this a mistake? You said, did you not, that you wouldn't have put him on waivers?
I think they have lost a very effective, affordable piece. And that's something that I think is valuable on any team. So in that respect, they're really deep at forward. And that's why it's tough for me to say it was a mistake. But I think it's disappointing. And I do think they've lost an asset. How's that? They've lost an asset. And what they've gained is a contract space. So for me, they've lost a really valuable piece of their organization and a very, very flexible option for them. So I guess they've made a little mistake. I mean, it's tough because I get the situation. I get how many forwards are here. I get the contract cap, and I get all of that. I understand it's a business. But I think there might have been better guys in my eyes that could have been waived, because I think Byron is effective in what he does as a bottom six player, and I think he's extremely affordable at that too, at $900,000. We're not talking about a franchise-changing mistake. We're not talking about something that's – is it going to play a big part in this season? Probably not. Not because they are so deep at forward. But, you know, it didn't need to happen because he was a flexible and very affordable piece here. But when you're in a situation where you have three new players, I keep going back to it. Last year at this time, they did not have Michael Frolik, Sam Bennett, or Josh Juris as NHL players on their roster. Right. 1 year later, they do. There had to be tough decisions made. With Byron's injury situation, it didn't help. I wonder if Joel Colburn would have been in a very similar situation had he not gotten injured, just because they were behind the eight ball a little bit. So because I get it, it's tough for me to criticize too hardly. But I do think that a small mistake was made, yeah, because I don't think he needed to lose Paul Byron necessarily. He would have been fine as a 13th or 14th forward.
Oh, I think that's what they wanted him for, right? Mm-hmm. That's where he slots in. I mean, you know, I asked Bob Hartley. I didn't get the answer I was looking for, so maybe I was fishing more than asking. But that position is intriguing to me, because do you now groom that? Because to me, Paul Byron's value in this team came down to one word: faith. And the coach had that in that player. He had the faith in that player. He could play him anywhere he wanted to play him in the roster. He had the faith that he could go, not long term, but you know what I'm saying, short term. Do you cultivate that? Do you now turn to somebody else and say, you know, and I don't think you can. I think that's organic, don't you? That, you know, what made Paul Byron attractive to the coach and the coaching staff or this team, I just don't think you can go and say, pick a name, Freddie Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Freddie, we need you to come in, and we need you to have that same sense of sacrifice and that same, you know, can-do spirit, or whatever you want to say about it. I'm interested. I have no problem with it. It's validation of where you've gone to. I think it's verification that you have grown as an organization and added depth, that all of a sudden difficult decisions are to be made. I almost think it's a little bit of a harbinger of things to come, Pat. I think we're talking about Paul Byron today. I'm wondering if 2 or 3 years down the road, or the end of this year, are we talking about
2 or 3 months down the road?
Right, right. Better yet, you know, Chris Russell, there's a very important decision that needs to be made. But you've got some young guys that are going to come out of first contracts, ELCs. And are you going to be able to keep all of them? Are you going to be able to keep Lance Bowman 2 years and all of those things? I just think it's a product of where you're at now. A year ago, it's funny you bring up Josh Juris. If Josh Juris does not spring onto the scene last year, is Paul Byron on waivers yesterday? I doubt it, right? They've kind of become the same guy, mm-hmm. in a way. Not 100%, but they, you know, I think a lot of what you hear about Paul Byron, you hear about Josh Juris.
And I mean, at this point, Juris is a little bit younger, and he was able to play all year in the National Hockey League, so you have a little bit more of a feel as to, you know, what he's about. Again, it's tough for me to slam the table and make these sweeping accusations when we're talking about a 12th, 13th, 14th forward on a team. I just think that there are times when you have guys that are valuable and you have guys that can play a role and don't cost you a lot of money. There's a reason why he was picked up, right? There is a reason why he was claimed on waivers, because of the fact that he's so affordable, because of the fact that, you know what, there's probably a fit there in Montreal, and there's probably a scenario where he works with the Canadiens. I mean, guys who are affordable and guys who are effective typically are picked up on waivers. It's why we see certain guys have it happen. It's the same thing with Frankie Corrado in Vancouver. A little bit younger, but still affordable. There's a bit of a ceiling there. I mean, you're like, hey,
sense. I think it's a little different than with Frankie
One's
Corrado.
More established for sure, and then the ages are different.
The other one's a little bit of a lottery ticket.
Like, let's be perfectly honest. I don't think Paul Byron is going to blossom into a 40-goal scorer all of a sudden. You know, and I'm not saying Frankie Corrado is going to blossom into an all-star, but he's that young defenseman that never seems to become available with offensive. I get your point. It's well taken. Did the Montreal Canadiens make this claim yesterday if Zach Cassian doesn't get into an accident on Sunday?
Maybe not. I mean,
because he's now off. He's off their roster, right?
He's in stage two of the rehab program, and he's not going to be with them, at least for the foreseeable future. I still think there's if Montreal claimed him, I still think there's a chance that somebody else claims him. If
we don't know, right?
We have no idea.
Because it goes, right, this time of year, it's still retroactive to last year's standings, right? So clearly, although Montreal's finished pretty high in the standings, so there wouldn't have been a lot of teams behind them with a selection, right? Do I have that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I would have guessed there's like four, five, or six teams somewhere in that mix who would have.
Basically, it's on how many points you had last. And then when is it? Is it December 1st that it reverts back to this year's standings?
Yeah, I believe it's after November, so December 1st
when your claims can go in. A couple other things. One, Mason Raymond stays. Mason Raymond clears. I don't think either one of us are surprised by that. Surprised that he stays, surprised that he's not sent down?
The very little surprise on that respect on Raymond, just because that salary was so – that's pretty prohibitive if you're a team. $3.5 million for the next two years. Most teams right now are dealing with either salary cap or budget crunches. It just didn't seem like that was going to be the case. That one was more the flexibility play, I felt. That one was more the, hey, you know what, we're going to see if there is a bite, and if he goes down, then we can make a decision in the next month about whether or not to send him to the American Hockey League. Ownership would obviously have to get involved then if we're going to be talking about paying, you know, $3.5 million to someone playing in the American Hockey League. Not every organization wants to do that. But for me, Raymond was always a flexibility play, whereas Byron was more of a, all right, well, perhaps there is a bite out there on him, and maybe that can end up being the way you go.
The other news of the day, and I'm really interested in the fact that Sean Monahan, already in year number three, starting year number three, has been given a letter.
Mm-hmm.
You're shaking your head.
Oh,
unrelated? Okay,
unrelated.
Sorry, that's the problem. It's like, oh, I can't believe it, Rob. I've been waiting for somebody to ask me that. I am so fired up. No, that's not it at all. I readily admit that I was wrong on this. I was asked, I think earlier today, you know, is he going to wear a letter? And I said, well, maybe later in the year if there's an injury, it's a good time. Nope, the time is now. And they put a letter on Sean Monahan. He splits it with Dennis Wyman. Is that correct? Chris Russell's the other.
So Chris Russell's a permanent alternate. Yeah. Obviously, Giordano's the captain. And obviously, then Wyman and Monahan will rotate home and road.
In the past, we've seen Hudler, Stajan, Backlund have all worn a letter. I think there's probably a few more in that group.
In of this incarnation of the group, I think those are the other ones who have worn these. Yeah.
Not surprised by the character of the player. A little surprised by how quickly. But I can't argue it. Can you argue it?
No. I mean, I've said, Lou and I got into this conversation a couple hours ago, and I've said it numerous times and more off the air. I think Monahan's the next captain of this team. I think he's your franchise player. I think he is the demeanor and the work ethic and just all the things that you want in a captain, and he's showing that at the age of 19, 20. He turns 21 on October 12th, I think it is. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy whose demeanor is so professional and so steady and all of that this doesn't surprise me. I mean, was I going into this year saying this is the year that Monahan gets a letter on his? No, maybe not, but I didn't think it was that far off. And because I believe that he's future captain material, I think this is really cool. And I think it's a very deserving nod to a guy who has done nothing but as good as he's been in his first two seasons in the NHL, he's also worked his tail off. The guy doesn't take time off. The guy doesn't dog it anywhere being a National Hockey Leaguer. He's hard in the gym. He's hard in practices, he focuses, all that. Like, this is a really good hockey player, and I think very deserving of this. I think it's very, very cool. So, no, I certainly can't argue it today.
Day one, he always struck me as professional. Like, this is what he does.
The first day that you and I talked to him was on the draft floor in New York or in New Jersey. Yeah. And the first thing that you got from Monahan was, whew, this guy is a straight-up pro. Like, he was...
Not a storyteller.
No.
He's here to work.
And he was there to work. Yep. From the very day that he was drafted.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's – and especially the way they do it here, you know, there's an involvement of the team, and this is a group decision. I talked to Mark Giordano about it, and obviously he spoke very complimentary of it. And I think you're absolutely right, Pat. And, you know, you don't want to put the cart in front of the horse, but this is the first step to an eventual – you want that nice, easy transition as opposed to, you know, we're hearing from other teams in terms of do we have to take it away from him and give it to one of the kids? You know, Mark Giordano is going to be around here for a while, we know, but when that time is right – you know it'll be a fairly easy transition.
Yeah.
Assuming all things stay equal, right?
I mean, how long? Gio's probably the captain here. Well, he's got a long contract, so he's probably the captain
If you've got a Monahan jersey, just put the A on it. That's all you need to do.
I don't think Gio's getting stripped of the captaincy anytime soon. It's not that.
Don't jump the Q and go right to the C yet.
But when Monahan's 28 years old, if you were to be named captain of this team, no, I don't think that's going to be a surprise to anybody.
Probably going to need a new jersey anyway, right? By that time, that happens.
I mean, look, Adidas will have taken over at that point. There's going to be new jerseys, period.
Exactly. A lot to do and a lot to accomplish this afternoon. The Texas Rangers and the Toronto Blue Jays will open up their AL Division Series coming up on Thursday, I should say. Jeff Wilson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram covers the Texas Rangers. We'll get his point of view on a team that, well, Stephen Brunt this morning said, Pat, as hot as the Jays down the stretch, close to that, very similar stories.
Yep.
Cole Hamels comes over, got a pretty good rotation now.
Both teams jumped up, fought back, won their divisions, because remember, Texas had a big gap to make up to Houston in the AL West. And what's also very similar is that both teams kind of didn't finish the year all that strong. Like, after August 1, they were great, but their actual finishes to the season last week or so,
Doesn't matter. Don't worry.
I don't really think it matters. I just think it's interesting that both teams had some struggles near the end of the
year. We can ask Jeff Wilson about it. The other part of that, too, is both have pissed off fan bases that they're playing early. Both very angry, very very much slaps in the face of the Rangers and the Jays by Major League Baseball to allow this.
Hey, I got tweets yesterday saying that, you know what, the schedule makers should lose their job because of this.
Absolutely, they should. Meanwhile, enjoy your sick day, your off day, your somewhat distracted day that we're all going to have on Friday.
Yeah, enjoy Thursday and Friday.
There's something about that, isn't there? I know it's not perfect, but
it happens
something
every year.
Yeah, but even then, like, you know, the Olympics or whatever, they're the middle of the day, or the World Championships. There's something about that. Embrace it. Run with it. Jeff Wilson will join us. Ron Robinson, the commissioner of the Western Hockey League, teaming up with the Calgary Police Service and the Calgary Flames for an interesting and timely project. He'll join us about 3:45. But when we come back, Brian Jennings, NHL's chief marketing officer, the big Fort Calgary play is tomorrow. I mean, that's going to be a big deal. The Molson Canadian NHL face-off, 2015, Fits in the Tantrums. I'm not sure if Brian booked Fits in the Tantrums. We can ask him. How do you find that? It's a big deal. This is an NHL event. This is run by the same people who run the Heritage Classic and the Winter event, or the Winter Classic. Big deal, you know.
Hey, they're kicking off the 2015-16 campaign in our city.
Right here in our own backyard, one might say. Brian Jennings from the National Hockey League. When we come back here on your home of the Calgary Flames, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Sportsnet 960, The Fan. 960 on the AM band. Streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. And always on the Rogers Radio app. Talking Calgary sports around the world. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show, brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to the Cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to comedycave.com.
Talking hockey in the afternoon, the Big Show with Rob Kerr and Pat Steinberg is only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
To me, the biggest step a player takes is when he comes back to training camp after that first year pro. Because, you know, as Rhett would know, you come out of junior, you think you know what pro hockey is all about, and that first year is a wake-up call. And, you know, from strength and conditioning to just the grind of a season, to playing against men, to all those types of things, that you learn so much in year one. You know, we push them pretty hard to have good summers. And you come back and you've just got that confidence. So I think he went through that. The other one, and it's been talked about, is, you know, you look at his season last year, and yeah, he spent some time in the East Coast League. That Now, that's not always a death sentence. Now, is there players, you know, is that league full of players that are going to be future NHLers? No. But it's still a good league, and for him, it was a necessary step. He needed to go and play a lot of minutes, get confidence. They don't necessarily like that, to hear that when we go through the process, but I think that was a really important process for him, and he's come in. He's played with a maturity. He's played with poise. You know, he's got the physical attributes. He can think the game. He can skate. And he looks much more comfortable out there and much more confident. So he's had a terrific camp.
That was Brad Treliving earlier. He's been busy today. He was in our studio with Boomer, Ryan, and Rhett. Got the they kept him for a couple of segments and everything. Bumped Derek. Derek got bumped this morning because they kept the general manager.
The gall of some people. You know, the gall of people.
But talking about Brett Kulak and... Right. It's funny, I said this to Derek yesterday. We talk about all the battles won, and, you know, look at Brett Kulak. We kind of forget that Sam Bennett, you know, also made the roster as a 19-year-old, but that was, as we talked about.
Seemed like a foregone conclusion.
It seemed like a foregone conclusion. But in terms of surprises, Brad Treliving saying the biggest was Brett Kulak, and talked to Mark Giordano today, and they're, from a player standpoint, very impressed with his poise. But the evaluation begins anew tomorrow. It's a different animal when that puck drops for real points.
It really is. And as much as NHL players are going to tell us that there's no switch that's flipped on the first day of the regular season, the same way there's a switch that's flipped in the first game of the postseason, it just happens. And I don't think it is conscious. It just is. The fact that the games matter for real, the fact that a giveaway actually matters for your team's chances of making the playoffs, the fact that, you know what, a save matters or whatever, it just is different. So I think that the evaluation is different because the bullets fly for real once you get to the start of the regular season. And for Brett Kulak, you know what? Every test he's had up until now, he's passed. But it's just like any other type of training. You can feel as confident as you possibly can in all your dry runs until that dry run is actually being evaluated and until it actually matters. You never know. And that's what it is for Kulak and the Flames now.
What's your observation on the... I mean, there's no sure way, one way or the other. Getting in at the beginning of a year in a home opener or getting in the regular season? I've always felt like sometimes it's easier just to kind of join a team mid-flight. Talk to Mark Giordano, and he said... Problem with that is, though, sometimes you come in and you don't know everybody, and they kind of formed a group, and you're new to that. You know, in the case of Kulak, he's been here. He's done all the team building that they've done this week. He's part of that group. But I think history has shown that sometimes it's easier for, you know, a kid to come up. Not every kid, but some kids to come up kind of midstream, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, the good news for Kulak is that he's been here and that he's been kind of a face throughout the entire training camp. But it certainly probably changes the nerves of the whole thing. He's never played in an NHL home opener before. Then again, neither is Sam Bennett, neither is Josh Juris. There's some guys.
No, but wouldn't you think that the playoff...
But at least they've played in it. They played in the playoff home opener,
which has
right?
got an element of that,
yeah.
right? Not quite the same. And I don't know. I just, you know, I think of, like, David Moss. When David Moss finally came to Calgary, he came up, scored goals in three straight games, and away he goes. Eric Nystrom. Eric Nystrom's still one of the best training camp stories ever. One of the first cuts made, came up, what, 2-3 weeks into the season, never looked back. He's been in NHL ever since. There's different routes to it, and I'm not saying Kulak's destined for this or destined for that. I'm really curious to watch him tomorrow, because tomorrow and then Saturday in Vancouver, it's just a different animal.
Yeah.
See how he handles it.
Well, and I mean, playing against guys who are now at that time when they're also in that same mindset.
Right.
You know, Brett Kulak's in that mindset where, hey, the bullets fly for real and that type of stuff. Well, now Brett Kulak is playing against guys who are doing that same thing. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. I do think it's a little bit different. I do
right.
think that there are more mistakes that can be made. I do think nerves play a bigger factor. And I don't think it's totally out of the question that, you know what, come October 20th, when the Flames are getting set to take on the Washington Capitals, we're talking about some struggles for Brett Kulak. And, oh, maybe this – I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I don't think it's totally out of the question.
Well,
that, you know what, maybe – at the regular season level, it's a little bit too fast. We'll see. I hope not, and I don't think that's going to be the case. But we've seen it before. Preseason to regular season doesn't always translate, and we'll see starting tomorrow night.
Well, I got nerves, Pat. I don't mind telling you. I got nerves. First time you and I are going to be part, albeit a small part, of NHL faceoff. Molson Canadian, NHL faceoff. 2015, Fort Calgary, tomorrow. Very excited to be part of this event and very excited that we can welcome our special guest, Brian Jennings, the NHL's Chief Marketing Officer and Executive Vice President, to the program. First of all, Brian, apologize because it's a little bit of a maze down here. It's not the easiest place to find, but welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge. Welcome to Calgary. How are you, sir?
Doing quite well, thanks. I appreciate being on, and yeah, I feel like I covered a little bit of Calgary before.
Tell us a little bit about what the NHL face-off event is, because traditionally this is something we would watch from afar. I believe last year it was in Toronto, but what's this event all about?
Yeah, we've tried to move the event around, and really what it is simply is a celebration of the start of the season. Every fan's kind of filled with hope, anticipation, possibilities for a season anew. I know Calgary fans are very anxious to get the drop the puck for real, some fun off-season moves, and so what we really do is invite the family down. It's free. It's fun. A lot of our partners set up, exhibitions. We just welcome everybody that doesn't have a ticket to the game. We're going to be showing the game on big boards, and hopefully Mother Nature cooperates, and we'll have some fun.
Well, it's Calgary in the fall. You never, ever know. But why Calgary this fall? Why bring it here?
Well, what we try to do is we balance it around. We've been in Winnipeg before, down at the Forks, and we've been to the East a couple of years. We were in Montreal and Toronto, and so we feel it's important to balance it out and get it across all of Canada. And certainly, our big partner in Molson is a big part of it and our title sponsor, and it's important for them to be able to engage the fans. So I think it's important from a league perspective to be in all of our markets, similar to how we look at an all-star game and our other key tentpole events.
Now, is this a lone event, or is there a corresponding event? Because I know tomorrow there's also a pair of games down in the United States. Is there an American version of this tomorrow?
Yeah, what we do is there's the banner raising that'll happen in Chicago,
right?
Which is pretty big, but not the size and scale that there is up in Canada.
Okay.
Really what it is really driven by our partners. They wanted to really leverage the association with the fan base, and we felt it was really important to, again, signal to the, after a long off season, signal to the fans that we're back and the games are for real.
Brian Jennings is the NHL's Chief Marketing Officer. He is our guest. We're talking about the 2015 Molson Canadian NHL Faceoff tomorrow, 3:00 at Fort Calgary. I'm Rob Kerr. He's Pat Steinberg.
So how do you come about getting all of the entertainment and all of what you put into this? How do you settle on that and decide who's playing and what's going to happen and all the stuff that you will have going tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a big, obviously, undertaking, Herculean task that we got our events. There's really everybody involved, from scheduling, guys like Steve Hassapetros that are putting the games on, all the way to our partner up here, from broadcasting to our events group that does a great job and worked tirelessly to turn Fort Calgary into ready to take on the crowds, and certainly to our sponsors. So really the organization, comes together, we plan it out, we figure out what market we want to go into. I'd have to give a big acknowledgement to the Calgary Flames and their ownership, and certainly senior organization that gives us the ability to come into the marketplace. We recognize there's a home game going on, and so we try to make sure that we're sensitive to that. But the music, as you pointed out, is also an important ingredient, right? We're having a big event. It's a festival. You want to make sure that you have stuff for all different age groups and whatnot. So we're excited to have Fits in the Tantrums coming up and performing. And they're going to be a real good headline act. We also got Ruben in the Dark and I think some local talent and Jocelyn Alice. So we're excited to kind of bring all that into the mix, again, with some of our sponsors' activations there. So there's really something for everybody and brings out the fan in all of us.
So how closely do you work with the Calgary Flames in putting this on?
We're very close. So what we'll do is initially we'll come in and we'll ask, like, hey, where are the areas where, Calgarians come and celebrate? And so Fort Calgary was quickly aligned. There's a couple other areas that we looked at, and we felt it was important to be able to welcome in a crowd. We want to be able to make sure it's a secure and safe place first and foremost. And the Flames are great about giving us the, kind of local market intelligence. We work closely with them on opportunities to certainly help promote the event because they know the marketplace better than anybody, certainly certainly better than any of us coming in from Toronto or New York or other locations. So it's a big tip of our hat to the Flames. And again, important coordination to make sure everything is working well and that we're doing things that complement each other and not compete with each other.
And you mentioned it, you know, there's all ages. So, you know, somebody with kids, if you're a kid, if you're single, like there's all kinds of different reasons to go, and there's kind of a little bit for everybody, hey?
There really is, and I think, you know, when you look at all of our different sponsors from literally candy and confection, you know, O. Henry, we're bringing in some great alumni players. Scotia's bringing in, I think we got Lanny McDonald and Jim Poplinski.
Yeah, Lanny was down a couple minutes ago. He's around.
Awesome, awesome. So I'm sure he gave the shout-out. Rhett Warner, Joel Otto. So different generations also attract different fan bases, you know, to that. You know, if you want to go over to the Reebok booth, you can try on the latest equipment. Honda's got all their vehicles here. So it's a lot of stuff there for people to go around, a lot of interactive stuff to shoot accuracy with our friends at Bridgestone. And then certainly the Molson Hockey House as the later hours. We open at 3,
yeah.
But the later hours come in and you'd like to enjoy maybe a cold beer, you could do that as well.
What, in terms of like when you've done it in Winnipeg, when you've done it in Toronto, in terms of numbers, what have you kind of seen in the past?
Yeah, we've had numbers ranging from in Winnipeg, I think we were in around 15 to 20, peaking at about 25,000. We had close to 55,000 in Montreal at Palace de Festival. Dundas and Young, we were in about the 20 to 25. And so we're anticipating, you know, maybe 15 to 20,000 here.
Wow.
in Calgary to come out. So, and again, that's coupled with all the folks that are going to be right here.
Yeah.
Where you guys are.
Brian Jennings from the National Hockey League is our guest here on the Big Show. We're talking about the 2015 Molson Canadian NHL Face-Off event. Takes place tomorrow at 4 Calgary, 3 o'clock. Oh, free to the public. The only encouragement we have is that best to take the C train to the City Hall station and just walk over. Not a lot of parking there, but I think most Calgarians are familiar with that. You mentioned before tent pole events. How many NHL tent pole events are there? Because I didn't put this in the same category as an All-Star Game or a Winter Classic.
Yeah, I mean, they're different degrees of scale, certainly,
sure.
But the same level of hard work and orchestration have to come in. And as a marketer, you know, for the league, I always want to make sure those touch points are right. So whether it's a smaller scale event or a larger scale event, that the fans are having a good time and that they feel that, again, this is a free event, but if it's a paid event, that they're obviously getting their money's worth. And so when you look at even from Kraft Hockeyville, we just celebrated. I was out in North Saanich in Victoria a couple weeks ago. An amazing event, kind of our unofficial launch of the season. We launched the U.S. version of that this year as well. And then Face Off, we have Discover. We have a big Thanksgiving Day promotion down in the U.S. We'll have a Winter Classic, Montreal and Boston at Gillette. We'll also have two Stadium Series games as well in Minnesota and Colorado. So no shortage awards, Stanley Cup playoffs. So the season's a long one, but I think our partners and at the state of the business really demand that you have those types of leverage points throughout the long season and give these different inflection points for your fans to celebrate the game.
Pat and I worked at the Calgary Stampede this summer, and we had a visit from a gentleman from Major League Baseball who chose the Stampede to come out and do an event. We talked about it, kind of selling Major League Baseball as a product. An event like this, you don't really need to sell the NHL to Canadians, do you? What's the goal? What does the NHL get out of this? What's the benefit?
Yeah, I mean, I think although we're very, we feel very pleased, we have a leadership position from a sport and a brand perspective in the Canadian marketplace. You can never want to take your position for granted. There's certainly seismic shifts going on in the demographic makeup. Canada is no different as a territory. So when we look at new Canadians coming in, you know, they're coming in from areas around the world that may not be predisposed to hockey.
Right.
And what they want to do is assimilate. And part of that assimilation process is making sure hockey is in the consideration set. And so it is important for us to not only give those hardcore fans a way to celebrate and acknowledge the start of the season, but it's also a way for us to welcome in new fans and let them know that hockey is a unifying force in this country. It's fun, it's social, and those are a lot of the terms that we use when we try to define this event, you know, as far as how we go about plan it out and plot it out.
One of your roles and responsibilities is the global marketing strategy for the league. how competitive is that marketplace these days? Because it seems like everybody wants to get to China, or everybody wants to be in Europe, be it Major League Baseball, be it the NBA. How competitive is that marketplace?
Yeah, it's hyper competitive. and I think, you know, the thing that I always point towards is it's not anything that is, you know, certainly the velocity of change that's happening is happening very, very quickly. And everybody is anxious, as you pointed out, to get overseas. I think you want to be confident in your brand, and you want to go in those areas where you feel like you can win and there's a level of relevance. And then as you look out beyond that, certainly next year in Toronto, the World Cup of Hockey will be our first real foray into a real international competition that we're doing jointly with the Players Association. And I think when you see that best on best competition, I think you'll see that act as a real thrust and an accelerant for where we're going.
Since you brought it up, I'm really curious about the discussions behind the scenes of the rest of Europe team and what I think is going to be fabulous, the under 23 team. That's a little, I love that. Like that's, but that's risky. Like, was that a hard sell to get to that point to try and try that?
Well, there's no doubt that there are always risk associated with doing it. But I do think that at the end of the day, I think when you're looking to put the best hockey players on, and there's certainly a great deal of importance for playing for your country, and you know the heart and the emotion, and all of that comes in the pure will. But I do think that those two teams are going to be amazingly competitive when you look at the players of which they can choose from. So, you know, when you look at their general managers and their coaches, they're going to have a lot of tools there to do, and I think they're going to be right there at towards the end, if not right at the end.
Correct me if I'm wrong. More than two decades now at the National Hockey League for you?
Yes. It is. I was before our commissioner, who started on February 1st of 1993, so I even preceded him.
So tell me, from when you started in 1990 to where we are now at the end of 2015, the NHL brand as a whole, just if you can you talk about the growth?
Yeah, it's been really amazing, and I feel like I've had that front row seat. And they always say in hockey, right, you pay for the whole seat, but you only use the edge of it. And I feel very, very fortunate that I've had the ability to kind of this window. I started in the consumer products area, which is really where my background was, and that was where I was for most of the league, most of the time. And really much owe Commissioner Bettman and Deputy Commissioner Daley and our Chief Operating Officer John Collins credit, because they gave me some more latitude and some more responsibilities along the way. And just like any good third or fourth line player, I've tried to run with it and do the best that I can. But the growth has been staggering. And even though you want to have ambitious goals and a vision, I think even from where it was back then to where it has gone now is just light years ahead. And I think we still have so much more to go. Because I know there's growth in this country. I know there's growth in the U.S. and then abroad, as we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think the best years are ahead of us.
If you look back to, say, 1990 or 1995, close to the time you started, and you were to have an event like this and bring it to an NHL city, would you have been able to expect 15 to 20 plus thousand people because of the strength of the brand, or is that an area that you've seen a lot of growth in?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of growth, and I think when you look at the touch points now of how we can talk directly with our fans, whether that be through social media, obviously through the media that we're talking with right now with you guys, our ability to get our message out is so demonstrably better than what it was back then. And if you think back in the early 90s, we had our All-Star game on a Tuesday night. It was a very quiet event.
Right.
And
yeah.
Now you think about a weekend celebration, you think about bringing the games outdoors. You think about all the celebrations that are in on it. Everything's just gotten bigger and more magnified. And I think, frankly, it's just never been a better time to be a fan at the NHL because of all those products and services and opportunities you have to celebrate.
As the CMO, can you kind of talk a little bit? Because I follow a lot of different sports leagues and on Twitter and on Instagram, and you guys seem to do it a little bit differently than other leagues do. You're a little bit more inclusive, and it seems like there's a whole lot more interaction. Your social media policy, would you be able to outline that at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we want to do is the difference really, sports are timeless, right? And I think the biggest thing I like to say is that the fans today and the currency of which they do, they're inseparable. Social media is part of their life. If you're not going to be in there and you're not going to allow them access and you're not going to allow them to have some level of freedoms as any confident marketer would want to do, you're going to stymie the growth of your brand. And ultimately, it's going to be at your own own peril that you won't be able to achieve what you want to achieve. And I think that's probably the biggest difference. We've always wanted to be, and frankly, maybe in some instances, felt like we had to be as a sport to work a little bit harder to make sure that we're engaging. And you just don't want to miss this next generation, because millennials will make or break brands. They'll make or break sports unlike any generation before. And I think you want your policies need to reflect that.
And I mean, that's kind of, because it's not, policy is the wrong word. Philosophy is maybe a better word when talking about it, but that's kind of, it kind of applies everywhere in that, you know, you've had to do a lot of work to maybe catch up to the other three major pro sports leagues, and that's a good platform to be able to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, and I think, you know, the streaming of games and all the things now that you have, the tools that you can do to connect and build audiences and connect directly with your audiences and not have somebody else kind of either dictate the value or give you time or not give you time on it. Now you're going directly to them and they can weigh in on it. So it's both enthralling and at the same time challenging, because they'll truly tell you how you feel.
No, I'm sure
it's
a balancing act. What's the, you know, I guess my last question, and we'll go back and remind everybody about tomorrow, but, you know, to Pat's point, the growth that you've had, but what's driven it? Has it been the advent of social media? Has it been the advent of sports television? What has driven the National Hockey League to that next level?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of things. I certainly couldn't point to one thing and say that was the panacea for everything that was happening, right, you know, prior. I think it's been a very strong brand. It's a great game. And we talk about it starts with the game on the ice. I take no credit for that. The general managers and the rule changes that have happened with this game, the athletes that play the game, you know, the business sits in the wake of the game on the ice. And right now, the game on the ice has maybe never been better than it has been before. You know, you point to the original six franchises, they're pretty healthy. And I think those are the roots of the game. So when the roots of the tree are healthy, I think the game flourishes. I think I would point towards really good media partners that have taken the game. And again, the explosiveness of technology and bringing the game and access closer. And then, frankly, our partners. These tentpole events that we do, I can't underscore it enough, that when you can bring people together and have them celebrate, whether you're in a stadium of 65 or 110,000 people, or whether you're in a smaller event where you're just connecting people with your brand and your game and showing them the game, I don't think there's anything more important that you could do from a marketer's perspective. And that has been the catapult of a lot of our growth the last couple of years.
3 o'clock, doors open. Everybody's welcome to come down, families, come on down to Fort Calgary, take the C train, walk on down, Fits in the Tantrums, all kinds of things to do, plus the game, not to forget the game, right? That'll be up there too.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head. Family, fun, and free.
Hey, well, we love most of that, don't
we,
Pat?
Good answer.
Absolutely.
Right there.
The 2015 Molson Canadian NHL Faceoff Hockey and Music Festival tomorrow at Fort Calgary. Brian Jennings, NHL's Chief Marketing Officer and Executive Vice President, good enough to join us in studio. Thank you for doing
Thanks,
this, sir. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet both of you guys. Thanks so much for the Calgary welcome, and look forward to tomorrow.
Oh, we'll see you down there for sure. We'll take a break when we come back. Jeff Wilson from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We'll talk about the Texas Rangers and the Toronto Blue Jays, which kicks off on Thursday here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.